And so here we are, worldwide live through BBS Radio. Thank you so much, BBS, for making this possible for us and all those folks that are joining in. I welcome you all. This is, as usual, a simulcast with a conference call. We have a bunch of people on the phone line. Today is birthday. FYI.
Is it windy everywhere?
It's windy everywhere.
Hey.
All right.
Hi, Wendy.
We had another person join in. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hello, this is Terry in Dallas.
Hi, Terry. Welcome back. How are you?
Hello, Heis. I'm good.
All right.
How's everybody else?
Crazy as ever.
Hanging on to the wind.
Good.
Is it windy in Dallas?
No, it's not bad at all. Is that the trend? There's a lot of wind going on?
No,
yeah.
It's very windy in Sedona.
Yeah,
you think
a lot
it's
of hot air.
Is it like Santa Ana's?
It's Wynn's birthday today.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot of hot air in Sedona.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, good Lord.
Good evening and welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, this is Terry.
Hello, Terry. Thank you so much for being here again. How are you tonight?
Yes, good, thanks. And the wind is going to come on in the next year in Tucson. Don't tell anybody, but it's his birthday.
It's his birthday. Nobody knew about that.
Yeah, nobody knew at all.
Nobody at all.
Are you taking him out tonight?
All right. We had more people
in
Tucson, to the call, if you have a chance.
What, Terry?
He's in Tucson, and I'm in Sedona.
Oh,
all right.
Be tonight.
Is he going to come on the line, Terry?
Yes.
Oh, good.
I got a song ready for him. All right. We had more people join in. We welcome you all. If you have a chance, please say your name and location.
Joanna from Chicago.
I had Joanna. Back, Joanna.
Hi.
Dorian from Seattle.
Hello, the Mr. from Seattle. Does not see who is this from Seattle?
Seattle.
Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Who else?
Hey, it's Lori from Portland.
Welcome back.
Hi,
Portland represented. Who else has joined in? Please say your name and location.
Marshall, Lake Villa.
Hello, Marshall. How you doing, man?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Great, great, great. Thank you for being here.
It's Don in Northern Ohio. Hi, hey, everybody.
Good evening to you, Don. Welcome to the call.
Thanks.
Hi, Don.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
It is Ed. Hold on, because you had a your phone was echoing. If you can mute yourself, then I can unmute you on my end. Let me try again. All right, you're unmuted now. All right, welcome everybody. It is 6:01. We are still waiting for the man of the hour, Mr. Winfrey. It is his birthday. Nobody knows except. Good evening, welcome to the
Terry, how old is he today?
Well, we don't reveal that. He's
8. He's sweet 16.
Never ask a lady how old she is.
Yeah, well, he's not a lady, is he?
Never ask him either.
Chris, are you here?
I am here. Hi, what's up?
Mr. Blair, I'm glad to hear your voice.
Oh, glad to hear yours.
All right. So, FYI, it's Win's birthday tonight. Day, the whole day. 24 hours straight. And,
what's his astrology sign?
Taurus.
Taurus?
Yeah, we're both Tauruses.
What's yours, Terry?
Ticket.
Terry, what was yours?
Taurus. Heinz Taurus, Jew.
Okay.
Wynn seems outwardly more like a Taurus than you do, Terry. What's your rising?
I'm on the cusp of Aries.
Yeah.
What's Jim?
He's Libra. It's Virgo. What is September?
Yeah.
Yeah, Virgo. Virgo.
Yeah. This is September 11th.
Oh, my.
Oh, no.
Hey, guys, what do you want me to do when Ben comes online? Do you want me to mute the phone and start playing a happy birthday song, or you guys want to sing for him?
No, we'll sing.
Let's sing for him.
Punish him with our singing.
You could play the happy birthday song for the end song tonight.
All right. I welcome the next caller. Say your name and location.
Hi, Morgan in California. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Morgan.
Hi, Morgan.
Good evening, Morgan. And welcome to the call.
Thank you, Heis. Appreciate it.
All right.
Day.
Hi, everyone.
You got your singing voice ready?
yes. We should have done that for Terry, too. Yeah.
We did.
We did.
Oh. Judge. Okay.
Next caller, I'm going to say 3, 2, 1. Happy birthday.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves. All callers are unmuted.
Oh, happy birthday
Happy birthday to you.
Beautiful.
Many more.
We should run a little show for the recording studio.
Many more.
What a bunch of drunk sounding people.
That would give us some drinks.
Wynn, you should book your recording studio for us.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Hey, you know what? This is going to be a special call tonight because it's my unbirthday celebration. And you guys probably know that I don't really like celebrating my birthday. And I sent out an email and I said, okay, I'm going to have to put up with it because somebody told everybody. And so now I got to cope with it. All right? And
You poor man.
Yeah.
You are suffering so terribly.
So what I did was I put a do not make a donation button up on the email page.
This conference is being recorded.
I put a do not make a donation button up on the email today. And I'll probably give all the money to Terry anyway. And Terry, are you on the line?
I am on the line, and you got a card or something from Eric.
No, they said it was a year or two before.
You got three donations?
I got three donations already. Well, let's see if I outdo you, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Right. Terry and I are in a competition. I should have put a mystery donate button up as well. So that way, if you're smart, you'll give to both of us. God, what a good idea.
What if it comes in and it says mystery donation? Does that mean it's for you?
No, it'll come in and do not make a donation. That's what I called it, okay?
I see.
And, let me see. Richard, are you on the line, Monica?
Yeah, it's Richard.
Hello.
Hey, guys. Well, this is fun. Wait a second. I'm going to mute everybody, okay?
All callers are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
Okay, I think Richard, let me see if I hear you. Can I hear you?
Yes, I hear you, Wynn.
Okay. Guys, I got to tell you a story about Richard and Monica. And I'm down in, what's that? Terry, are you saying hello?
Yes, hi, Wynn.
Hi. Terry, are you there?
Yes.
Earth to Terry.
Okay. Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Well, some of you were on the call a couple of months ago when I was at, when Terry and I were both at the UFO Congress in Phoenix. And there was a lot of extraordinary things happening at that show. And, you know, I went down there and we got a booth or a little table space to sell pendants. And after the first half day of the show, I said to myself, I don't want to do this. I don't want to sit at this booth selling pendants. And, you know, one of the reasons is that that is a particular group that, how do I say it? You know, the speakers there were all on George Norrie, and I felt like I'm presenting myself in a demeaning way by being a pendant salesman. And if I'm going to sell pendants, I got to go somewhere where no one knows me, and then I can do it. But now, it's like being on George Norrie and, you know, having a lot of respect, and then sitting there saying, hey, guy, I tried this pendant on. Look at this. Didn't work. So I decided I left the table. I just abandoned it. I came back and sat there occasionally, but I didn't talk to anybody. I didn't try to make any sales. And but I spent the time walking around the show and meeting people. And there are a lot of really cool people in that show. And a lot of pretty advanced souls. And if you were on the call on Sunday, we were sitting outside and we did the first hour of our Sunday call with Sasha Lessen, who was kind of a student of Zacharias Sitchin's, who was just blowing himself out on feeling the Elohim energy on the call. And his wife, Janet Lessen, one day we'll have them both as a guest because they're really interesting. And Terry, who else was sitting there? Were you at that show? I can't even remember now.
Yeah, I met the fellow from Tucson. I met...
You're talking about Richard. That's Richard. He's on the line right now. Okay?
Yes. Yes, we talked. Well, he told me about his mirror. And...
All
right. Met a couple of other people that were really interesting.
Now, I have developed this sixth sense intuition of people. I can sometimes get it right, and I can tell, I can feel their energy, and I can relate to a past lifetime we had together that I know about. And I follow my intuitions. I don't know if I'm right or not. I don't get any omniscience saying I know this, but I follow my intuitions. And there were two people on that show, only two, I believe. And I asked the question, do you have a connection with Egypt? And, you know, there's indications that I have a connection, a resonance, or something, with that very controversial Egyptian pharaoh. And I don't usually like to talk about it because if you had a prominent past life, it's like sometimes it gets in people's minds and they can't even relate to you in the present. Even I'm susceptible to that. When I first met David Wilcock and was talking to him on the phone, I could barely talk to him because here I had read 25 Edgar Casey books or something, and I knew David was the incarnation of Casey, and I couldn't relate to him as a human. So I don't like talking about past lives in general as putting my first foot forward in meeting someone. But nonetheless, I've studied it enough, and one of the things is that I have a connection with this Egyptian pharaoh. Akhenaten, who was sometimes called the heretic pharaoh, heretic, I forget how to say the word, but heretic, he was controversial because what he did was he outlawed all the religions of Egypt and said there was one God. And in the Carla Ruckert material, she says that Akhenaten was one of the few people throughout history that the Ra group was talking to. And, you know, I was studying that, and some of you may not know this, but Daphne was the spitting image of Nefertiti, who was Akhenaten's wife. And I was unfolding all of this stuff, and there were, like, lots of indications in the first 6 months of Daphne talking to me that I had a connection with Akhenaten. And I did do a workshop on it. I called it the Egyptian Connection. I put together all the things, the research I had done, and I was piecing together what actually happened in Egypt with Akhenaten, and Akhenaten was connected to bringing in Jesus later on, and the Ra group was working on that, and we've talked about that aspect in other of our calls. And one of the things that really influenced me and actually blew my mind was early on, this was like probably in 2002 or something, I was researching the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and I was at a metaphysical bookstore in Los Angeles called the Bodhi Tree. And I was in their used book section, and I was buying every Edgar Cayce book I could find because I was studying them as a reference for writing that book and making the connection between Wilcox and Cayce. And somehow there was a book on the shelf there called My Son, Akhenaten. And I didn't know I had a connection with Akhenaten at that time. I didn't know exactly the extent of it. But I knew there was something going on with Egypt. And so I bought that book, and I read it. And it was actually a channeled book from Akhenaten's mother, who was Queen Tai. And she was the wife of Akhenaten's father, obviously, who was also a pharaoh. And she... it was channeled through somebody by the name of, God, what's her name now? God.
Is it Deborah Galton?
No, not Deborah Galton. It was a European lady who, my son,
British, right?
Who?
She was from England, British.
Yeah, I'm just looking it up. I'll tell you who she was. And in any case, in this book, Anne Ray Colton was her name. Anne Ray Colton. In fact, if any of you have a fascination with Egypt and my connection with Egypt, it's a must-read book. It's still available on Amazon. The only thing is she spells Akhenaten in a weird way. I-K-H-N-A-T-O-N. And so there's the whole story of what happened with Akhenaten and Nefertiti, and from like a fly-on-the-wall perspective. And as I was reading this book, and she was talking about Nefertiti, I said, oh, my God, Nefertiti sounds exactly like Daphne. And Nefertiti was very aristocratic and very elite. And I was sure, I never asked this question, but I am sure that Nefertiti was channeling. And the Ra group was talking to Akhenaten through Nefertiti, and that is how he decided that he was supposed to outlaw, fire all the priests who were negative and say there was one God. And he became very, very, very unpopular for doing that, because essentially all the, he fired the priests, and for thousands of years, Egypt had certain traditions of all their gods. And, of course, we've talked about that, that it seems to me that according to much of the research I've done, the gods of those, the gods of ancient Egypt were Anunnaki, and in many cases, negative. And they were not the one infinite creator. They were not the Ra group or the Elohim group. They were lower consciousnesses that were vying for power amongst the people. And so Akhenaten fired them all, and they got really mad at him. I mean, eventually, I don't know if he did the best thing diplomatically, because eventually he built his own city. They marched on his city. They destroyed his city. They destroyed every remnant of Akhenaten and Nefertiti. And for a long time, Akhenaten was not even written in history, because there was no record of him. And they went back to their old gods, and until there was some excavation, and they found the bust of Nefertiti, and they started finding things about the history of Akhenaten. Did he get rewritten into history? But otherwise, he wasn't there. And I think that was about 150 years ago, and it was a German crew that found the bust of Nefertiti. And then, you know, in general, people don't understand that the priesthood of Egypt was negative, that it was essentially the same as the Illuminati today, the same, as far as I can say, they were doing sacrifices, and they were doing all kinds of things which were controlling people out of fear. And then Akhenaten came in, and after thousands of years of doing this, and people thinking that they were legitimate, he just knocks it all out, builds a new city, moves all his followers to it, and then his own priests in general march on his city and destroy it. And there's a mystery, because no one knows what happened to Akhenaten. Either he was killed, or he left the city and exiled himself. And some people said he exiled the city, he knew they were coming, he took his followers with him, and became Moses. Well, let's not even go there, okay? You can do your own research. But nonetheless, I have a sensitivity to people. You know, that was a big city. There were 100,000 people, as I've read it. And so Akhenaten kind of ran his city, as I've read this, in kind of a bohemian way. He was treating everyone kind of in an equal way. And there was a lot of artists, there were a lot of, you know, he changed the nature of art. And apparently Michael Jackson, a past life of Michael Jackson, he was an entertainer in the court of Akhenaten. I mean, it's all a very fascinating historical look. And so I was at the UFO show, and I'm walking around, and there were two people there that I asked the question, do you have a connection with Egypt? And one of them was this guy and his wife who had a booth, and he was selling this huge mirror that he called a moon beam collector, collector. And his wife was telling me how eccentric he was, and I said, "Well, I'll bet I can equal or beat him, right?" Because this fellow actually built this parabolic, huge parabolic mirror, and people would stand in front of it, and they'd get healings. And then I was studying him a little bit after the show, I looked him up on the internet, and he actually built a 5-story mirror in the middle of the Arizona desert, okay? And people were coming in the evening to stand in front of his mirror to get healings. His name is Richard Chapin, and that's who's on the line tonight. But now I walk up to him, and I said, do you have a connection with Egypt? And he looks at me, and he says, yeah, I think I was Ox Mountain's advisor, okay? Now, I said, what was your name? And he said, Mira. Well, I read this book that was channeled from Queen Tai, who was Ox Mountain's mother. And in that book, they said Ox Mountain's chief priest advisor was named Maya, okay? And I said, well, that's pretty close. And I started feeling the resonance. And I said, I think that could be this guy. And then I'm walking around to another booth, and I don't know if you guys know who Vaughn is. Vaughn has been a regular on our calls, and Vaughn was working with this lady who was building vortexes and amulets and magical stuff. And there was this very exotic, beautiful woman who was working at that booth. And I asked her, I said, do you have a connection with Egypt? She looks me in the eye and she says, well, I was Queen Tai, right? Now, how many people ever heard of Tai historically? Almost no one. And I looked at her, and she was very, very elite, very articulate. Terry, you met her. Did you meet Nikki, Terry?
I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
She could have been easily a queen, right?
Yeah, she could have been.
She had that thing, and I said, okay, if this is Queen Tai, then I'm gonna stay in touch with this person, because she was actually, Vaughn was putting her up, and she was staying in Vaughn's penthouse in North Hollywood. And Queen Tai was like the principal, I mean, if you read this book, Queen Tai was the principal advisor, one of them, for Akhenaten. And when she was pregnant with Akhenaten, she would go talk to Maya, and Maya would give her a rundown on this baby that was coming through her, okay? And so it's been on my agenda to meet Richard, who I met there, who might have been Akhenaten's main advisor, and I've been trying to get the time to do it, and I did it today. I drove to Tucson, which is about 200 miles from Sedona. I spent the whole afternoon with Richard and his wife, Monica, and, I mean, we have a connection. I mean, we sit together, and we feel each other on a really deep level. It's like finding a super old friend. I mean, it's still manifesting. Now, the interesting thing is, you know, what does Richard do in this life? How did he build a $2 million 5-story mirror in the desert? How did he do that? He owns the largest swap meet in Arizona. And, you know, I started studying his swap meet. And he runs this, I mean, this is what I was getting as I was studying it. He runs this swap meet like a love fest. He doesn't charge people enough. He does, but he doesn't charge people what would be the market value. Like if you go, you know, I used to do swap meets. And if I went to a really good swap meet, it might cost $30, $40, $50, usually $40 or $50 for space. And a super good swap meet like the Rose Bowl, it costs $100 for a space. And so Richard has this swap meet that he charges $15 the space, okay? And then if people are coming to a swap meet, there might be 30,000 people. It depends. If it's a big swap meet, 20,000, 30,000, 10,000. They usually charge people $1 admission. That's a lot of money. That's $50,000, a weekend if you have a really big swap meet. And Richard is not charging people for admission. And he stays open late, and he has all this music in the evenings. And he's got the biggest swap meet in Arizona. And he's running it from his own level, to my opinion, like a spiritual community. Of course, it's not a new age woo-woo type community because it's all got lots of Hispanics. And I have to go there sometime. I might be reading it wrong, but I said, this guy's a beautiful guy. He's using his position to make a contribution to the, makes me cry, make a contribution to the ordinary people on this planet, in the swamp meet. And on that note, Richard, I'm turning it over to you.
Oh, well, what can I say? Thank you. That seemed pretty nice. I mean, I think it's one of the largest. You know, Phoenix has a very good one. It's quite big, and it's daytime. And they charge, of course, and do all that. But we're at daytime, but especially nighttime. And so it's really a joy, I think, to stroll around the aisles and, have fun and see different people and make connections and we're celebrating our 40th year. We started it when I was 21, 22. Uh-oh, there's the age. But so this is our 40th year, and I think it's been it's pretty good. But thank you what you said. I do feel that connection to people, some type of little giving as much as you can. We don't make, a lot of money, just enough, and it's great. And, I hope it continues. And also, just in regard to what we do, I've, in my past, developed a complete science museum. And it had 150 exhibits that traveled around various places, sponsored by various people and other museums. And I do have exhibits in, the top science museums in the country, Chicago, Seattle, New York, Philadelphia. And so I hope that just helps my other endeavor, which has been now just a real commitment of 11 years now of the Moonlight Collector. I like Moonbeam is also pretty interesting, but we call it the Moonlight Collector. And it's just been a real joy for this, and I really am hoping that as time goes on, it gets more and more accepted. We have now thousands of case studies, let's say, and at least statistical results, and of course some hardcore medical, never enough though, and I would doubt that the stricter medical community would accept it too readily right now. And I have my best friend is an accomplished MD and just says, okay, I'm taking it in stride, but don't call me the moon doctor friend or whatever. But so we're getting more and more medical data with machines and doctors, at least a couple that have done before and after tests. And it is quite extraordinary before and after. So you'd be in it for maybe 20 minutes on an average, and many good things would happen to your body and change. And so, and of course my wife Monica is here, and she knows a lot about that aspect too, and she could talk about it. But, we're hoping it's a spiritual awareness also just to get this great light. I mean, it's just amazing.
What kind of experiences? Why don't you share some of the things? First of all, what's your website? You can look up Richard's. If you look up Richard Chapin Tucson, you'll find his website, Chapin, and you can see his Your swami is called the Tankavirti.
Tankavirti swami, yes. Tankavirti
swami.
Yeah, T-A-N-Q-U-E, and then Verde.
And the other website is called
AmazingMoonlight.com. So just AmazingMoonlight.com.
Yeah. And what are some of the things? By the way, I'm going to go over his house tonight, and I'm going to be in front of his moonlight collector, so I'm going to see what it feels like. And probably Terry and I will come down, and she'll try it, too. But what are some of the things that you've seen people go through? You say they it sounds like they do tests, like on their blood pressure or things like that, or cancer healing, or what is it?
Well, we've actually had some cancer. Right, we actually had some cancers getting better, let's say from third stage down to one stage, and second stage to no cancer. We've had fourth stage cancer, and it's been a little tough there. We haven't quite been able to stop that. But again, what's the dosage? Maybe that could have been a few more dosages. But Monica could actually expound on a few things here, too.
Hey, Wynn. It's Monica.
Hi, Monica.
How are you?
Hello.
Richard is like a stoic person, and he runs the collector, even though it has a remote, and people can run their own if they have one by sitting in front of it. So often he doesn't hear a lot of the reactions that people are getting. For, I would say, the 3,000 or 4,000 people that have gone through the light at this point, negative responses are pretty much non-existent. The positive things were about 99% cure of asthma. And I'll say that on your show. That's a hard thing to say, but to be honest with you, even down to people bringing their pets and people that have had it for years, years and years of asthma and suffering, and watching that go away in 5 minutes in this light was quite remarkable. So there's a lot of miraculous stories. My favorite story is about a little girl who was born with a defective heart and by age 3 needed a heart transplant. And we met her when she was reaching puberty, maybe about 11 or 12. And her parents would bring her every month out to the Moonlight Collector. And she said that the parents told us that she was at adult age would have to receive a new heart and that the heart does not grow. And she would need an adult heart. And that's why they were bringing her, just to kind of prepare her, to relax her, because the moonlight does help with depression and all the, you know, things like that, and just to help her because she was becoming quite anxious. Anyway, she came out for 6 months, and then I didn't see her for 2 months. And now I'm quite concerned, and I call up the parents, and I say, well, did she have the surgery? What happened? And they said, her heart grew. They said, completely medical dumbfounded. Her heart grew. The little 3-year-old heart grew, and she doesn't need an adult heart. And this girl would only be about 17, 18 right now. So I'm going to catch up with her again. But, you know, daily stories like that of people just coming in and feeling better.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And, you know, what's it all about? This is light therapy. But it's light that is a God-given natural light. It's really ruled us. You know, the sun rules the day, the moon rules the night, and I call it the forgotten light. I mean, people think that the moonlight is just reflected sunlight, but it's furthest from that it can be. We have, of course, all the spectrums of sunlight and moonlight and so forth, and moonlight has its own value, and there are reasons for this, of course. 3 or 4 decisive reasons. And it's affected our Earth for billions of years. The ocean is just, it's ruled by moonlight more than sunlight. And plants and animals, some of the latest studies from universities, the little bit that's been done with moonlight, are certain plants are lunotropic, and they respond to moonlight at various stages of the light levels, 1/3 moon, 2/3, full moon. And at each level, increase their hormones and neurotransmitters, and their vitamin levels go up. And excuse me,
tomatoes, tomatoes and wheat.
Well, actually, and two that you would never think of, tomatoes and wheat are actually considered lunar tropic, at least in you know, a few university studies. And, of course, the sunlight gives it the photosynthesis and the way to grow, but the moonlight is actually the brains of certain areas of how it increases its vitamins again in certain metabolic instances. So this is light therapy at its very best. Moonlight cannot be duplicated by any artificial means. I mean, you get a few of the things, and artificial lights, of course, have their value, but there's nothing like the whole feast, like the complete spectrum. And it's bound to hit certain areas in our body, in our minds, and even in our soul that just, you know, touches us and respond. Every cell in the body has receptors for light. That's, of course, a fact. And in various light levels, some respond to blues a little more, some reds, some yellows. And in fact, the moon is redder than our incoming sunlight. And in fact, you've heard, you know, the golden sun and the pale moon. It's the exact opposite. I mean, it's the golden moon. It's actually also a little yellower than incoming sunlight. So these things respond, you know, to our cells respond to these things.
Now, the moon, we know the moon controls water, controls waves. The ocean tides
right.
are connected
right.
to the moon.
Well, that's
and that's what's called geophysical. It's on a certain geology, physical level that, yes, it has that gravitational pull. But, mm-hmm. of course, we're talking of the forgotten light, the actual light itself. And, of course, women's menstrual cycles, they say, are based on the moon cycle. I mean, right there is a very, very big...
circadian rhythm.
You know, well, circadian rhythms. The human circadian rhythms are said to have developed by the rhythm and the clockwork of the moon. You know, the sun is great, of course, but it's always in a certain pattern. The moon has this clockwork mechanism that has affected our bodies over millions, billions of years. And the eating, the sleeping patterns. But now they're finding out circadian rhythms, our 24-hour rhythm of our cells, are really maybe a major factor in how our bodies work. Our pancreas works a little bit better at 3 in the morning, you know, our liver is 6 in the morning. And therefore, if we get that on the proper cycle, our bodies will naturally start healing themselves. And that's what moonlight can do, especially the impact of concentrated moonlight, because we just can't stay in the moon for days at a time, you know. Yeah, and it's approximately 90 times. And this gives you that impact and reaches, hopefully, a threshold into your body
so
that then triggers. Yes.
Your device actually increases the moonlight strength 90
yes.
times.
So let's say approximately 90 times or so.
So if a person is in front of your mirror for an hour, it's like they were out in the moon for 90 hours, right?
Well,
something like that.
Maybe something like that. Yeah, just figuring out that whole... I don't know if it would be that, maybe about half that, you know, about 40 hours or 35 to 40 hours, that type of thing.
And it's It's not a flat mirror. It's parabolic. And so it's creating a beam onto your face, basically, or whatever part of your body you feel you might need it on.
And it's more so than a so-called even ordinary parabolic mirror. It's made up of 84 individual mirrors placed in quite a strategic parabolic pattern in 3 different ways, right? Left, up, down, and also diagonally. but they're also placed just right is the way to form their spot size.
How did you figure this out, Richard?
Well, actually, I needed help on that, thank you. And so I went to the top people, and we actually can use the name, and I think Monica remembered the name, of possibly the top optical person maybe in the world. He has 135 optical patents. He's a Korean scientist, a doctor, of course. And I think Monica's going to go get his name, and he says, well, use it. He helped us get a certain mathematics and configurations. And, of course, here we are in Tucson, and this is one of the astronomy capitals, if not the number one, and at least the U.S., maybe the world. And I would access whoever I could, and especially for the big one, which only took 2 years, I say only. But the small one actually took 3 years. I still can't believe that. I think I was depressed for 1 year after the big one went down, but then it still took 3 years, you know, 3 years. So I've used the help of others, of course. We rose back up. Oh, this was Dr. Young Sik Kim, K-I-M. So that was also...
That's the Kareem guy, right?
Yes, right. And he helped us figure out the best pattern and how the mirrors fit together.
But anyway, if anyone in your audience knows, you know, he did this intuitively, this 84. Is 84 have some significance that I would love to know from somebody? We are all parts of this puzzle. We don't know, but intuitively, 84 mirrors has worked with the big one and it worked with the small one. So.
Well,
you picked 84, right?
Yes.
By the way, I just got an email from Doug at BBS, and he said he was playing music over our show today. So if you're on BBS, sorry about that. And it's a mistake of BBS. And Richard, I wanted to ask you, look, the 84 is interesting, but I wanted to ask you two questions before our show is over. Now, look at this. You're hogging my whole show. This is supposed to be my birthday celebration show.
Monica,
you know, too. Monica, too, yeah. you know, two things. One is, how in the world did you get the idea that of moonlight concentrated would be good for you? And how in the world did you get the idea that you were Akhtatin's advisor? Okay? I mean...
Maybe to answer the second question first, Monica and I celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary in Egypt, and we exchanged rings and vows in the Great Pyramid in
5 years ago
in the King's Chamber, and spent a few hours there. And then so about 160 miles south of Cairo is where Akhenaten had his golden city, and where there are also tombs within the mountains of other people, which we didn't know at that time. And one of those other people in the tombs, at least, was the famous Mira, which we didn't know. And we went into this tomb, and it's a great story. You know, Monica says it well, and try to make it brief.
I'll make it brief. We went into this tomb beautifully done in hieroglyphics. It is preserved beautifully. It had to bribe the guard to get in, and the guard has been guarding it for probably 5,000 years. I mean, this is in his family. And so we get in, and we're doing a beautiful meditation for about an hour, and just as I'm ready to leave, that same guard, everyone left, there was 10 of us, everyone left, and he goes, Yalabina, which means come back, Yalabina, and I'm thinking, okay, he's pretty safe looking. I don't know where I am. Everybody else left. I jump back into the tomb area, and he takes me to way in the back where it's actually dark. Now you can't see anything. And there are enormous steps, and I start going up these enormous steps in a spiral staircase. And Richard became concerned because I didn't come out, and he went in, and then this is what happened to him, because it really isn't about me. It's about him.
Well, then when we reunited and started to go out of the structure, I got hit with just a, a wave, a knowing, a full body sense that there was this other person there, but yet embodied me and encompassed me. And I wrote down three pages after that, and he was crying, and he said, "There's no difference between time and space. It's all one. It's all together." And at that time, he said, "I was his best friend. We were very together." That was Mira, and maybe he also meant that, you know, we were as one. I don't know. Maybe I wasn't precisely Mira, or maybe I was. It's hard to say, but now that I look back on it, we just felt like one entity. And so I wrote down a lot. I have to look at that, Monica, here. It's been a few years. And crying. And, of course, he mentioned the light collector, by the way, and said that, you know, it will happen, because I wasn't sure at that time. Our big one had gone down after 4 years. And now what? We never would have made a small one, because I always kept thinking it has to be big, but it didn't have to be. And hopefully this little one's actually as powerful as the
but
big one within the face area. Right. Mm-hmm. So he said, it's going to happen whether you do it or not. I would like you to do it. You should be doing it. It will unfold like the lotus flower, and it will all be fine, but you just have to wait. And of course, it was already now 3 years later, so 3 or 4 years. But don't get crazy about it. Just let it be. And so it was just an amazing, overwhelming experience. Just, you know, I was crying, and I don't know, the hope it was just. And then we find out later that was Mira's tomb, and no one had said that. And he was the high priest to Akhenaten and the main advisor. And so it was just, you know, an amazing, overwhelming experience. And as for the just the light collector itself, you know,
wait a second. Before you go to the light collector, we got about 3 minutes, I think. Got to be fast there. But let me just say that, you know, I think I sent you that excerpt from Nefertiti talking to me through Daphne. And I did have the question. I had the question, well, if Daphne was Nefertiti, how could Nefertiti talk to me through Daphne? You know, and I asked that question at channeling, and they said, the soul fragment of past lives still exists forever, and that soul fragment was coming forth and communicating through Daphne. And, you know, if any of you are fascinated by all this Egyptian stuff, I have a workshop, and it's really extraordinary workshop. You can hear Nefertiti talking to me, and I really don't like promoting it because I don't like to say I was Akhenaten. But if this has provoked you, you can find that workshop at egypt.intelligent-infinity.com. egypt.intelligent-infinity.com. And it's really fascinating. It's about 4 hours long. There's a cost to it. If you can't afford it, send me an email, and just we'll work it out. Because it's the kind of thing that if you're attracted to Egypt, this has got a lot of stuff on this workshop that can trigger cellular memories. The other thing I want to make sure I put out is, Richard, now that we've done is we've talked about this, we have 4 minutes, okay? I want to make sure we get this out. We've talked about your mirror, and I'm sure there's people that are thinking, I got to try that. I want to try that. Unfortunately, you can buy one, and they're expensive. How much are they, Richard?
Well, $39.95, so they're for approximately
$4,000. $4,000.
We don't really make very much on it. It's all handmade and precision-made and, of course, guaranteed. But anyway, so that's, I think. But of course, it can be used in a group aspect. If one person bought it, they can treat a few people, or, you know, an institute or whatever, or...
their own.
Now, the other thing is, once a month when there's a full moon, you do a demonstration of it, correct?
Yes, sometimes in the half moon, which is fine too. Even a third of a moon we've showed, and even, could be down to really every aspect of the moon. There's slight variances in the spectrum, but they still hold quite a lot of impact.
You could write to us at info@amazingmoonlight.com and put in a request if you're heading down to Tucson, and we will try to include you.
Yeah, you'll get an invitation to one of their
moonlight
ceremonies.
Yeah.
And
I still read every email. I'm still reading them.
So you definitely try before you buy if you want.
Richard's goal, I'm sure, is to have this as a therapeutic device. Of course, a doctor who's going to use it has to be willing to open his office at night on the full moon.
Right. You
have to look for vampires, right?
I just wanted to add in there, Wynn, before you go, because I see your show's almost over, is that we might call it a moonlight collector, kind of almost like our pet name, but it truly is an interstellar light collector, which means that you can actually point that mirror toward a star like Sirius or Vega or even one of the planets. But we have definitely, that's enough for another whole show, I'm sure, but we have definitely felt like we got hugs from the universe and some forms of communication. So it's definitely an instrument for people to be able to use on all levels.
Now, you never had anyone materialize from another planet through your collector, did you?
No, but okay, I'm going to announce it. Here's a world-breaking announcement for you, Wynn Free. This is for you. We have never released this, but when we had the big collector, we turned it towards Sirius for the first time, and it was a series of events that made us do that. And the first day, that we did that, immediately symbols appeared all over the mirrors. Everyone who went in that evening saw them. There were pyramids, sphinxes. There was the pi sign, the DNA strand. By the third night of observing Sirius, the word in, and you got to remember, this collector was literally five stories high. So when I say these letters I'm about to tell you, they were about 15 feet high each. And the word love, L-O-V-E, in 15-foot letters, came across the collector, and hundreds of people saw it in a period of about 3 months. I finally got the Discovery Channel to loan me a camera. Well, not loan me, I had to pay for the camera, but I got the camera out there because nobody could film it. It was all moving. The universe is moving, and this light is coming from 7.5 light years away, but probably not. It's probably some way that they're projecting. Finally, we have about 5 minutes of it. I have never released that film. But that is something, that is a message for mankind, obviously. So,
yeah. I'll have you on our show again, and I'll release it to our group because they won't think you're crazy, okay? They don't think I'm crazy, and I'm not crazy, you're not crazy. And, according to our information, we were talking about the Ra group this afternoon.
Yes.
Right? The Ra group is actually creating the crop circles. And I would not be a bit surprised if it was some level of the Ra group. We could ask that question. Do you know that? We could ask them and see what they say.
I'd love to
know. That would be great.
Because, if you were Akhenaten's advisor, and Akhenaten was talking to the Ra group, and, I think you have a connection with the Ra group. We were talking today, and we spent about 4 hours, and this is the first time we've actually talked, and I felt very strongly Richard had a connection with the Ra group. And Monica had a connection with the Elohim group, and the Elohim energy came in, and I could see them all around Monica, and she could feel it. We were feeling it together. So she got a confirmation. So this is all really fascinating. I don't know where it's going to go. I think we should do another show and have Queen Tai on the show and have an Egyptian reunion. What do you think of that?
Wow, great. Yes, we'd love to.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I have an announcement.
Hi.
Yeah.
I have an announcement before we stop. Jim has a best friend in Long Island who has just had a heart attack and isn't expected to live the night. And Jim came in tears and asked if we, as a group, could put him in the light and the Elohim too.
Okay, let's do it. What's his name, Terry?
Glenn.
William?
Glenn.
Okay, so let's put Glenn in the light, but we'll do it Sunday when we bring all the energies in. We don't have time to bring the energies in. I was going to do a planetary healing tonight, and I didn't do it. I'll do it on Wednesday before our Wednesday call. But, Richard, this was really impromptu. I just felt the energy was there. Richard and Monica and I had such a good connection, and that I wanted to introduce Richard to our group, and I hope he holds a great energy. Both of them hold great energies, and I hope they'll be showing up on our calls in the future. And sometimes as talking about some of his work, I mean, if you can't figure out how to contact Richard and you want to go get on his list, if you send me an email, I will forward it to him. So you'll be informed when they're going to be demonstrated. Do you charge for these demonstrations?
No, we don't.
No, it's free.
So,
it's free.
So anyone that can get to Tucson and wants to try it, you got it. And there's a Motel 6. It's $39, not very far from Richard's house where I'm staying.